unfiltered, uncensored. Ready to take on the issues the mainstream media is afraid to engage in. Bringing you the hard-hitting truth. This is the Mass Resistance Radio Program. On Boston's 1330 WRCA. Now, your host and voice of the Mass Resistance Movement, Brian Kamiker.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Kamiker, and we are back on the air on WRCA Radio in the People's Republic of Cambridge. We are broadcasting from our studios here in Central Square, behind enemy lines, ladies and gentlemen. And we're back every week here on WRCA. We're going to be 1 hour every week from 11 until noon every Saturday. And we're working on some other stations. Jack, do we have any stations that we're working on yet?
We're working on.
Okay. we're going to try to get on a lot of stations. Amy is not with us. Many of you remember Amy. She is traveling in Wyoming. She is in, as this program is being broadcast, she is in Laramie, Wyoming, doing research on the Laramie Project. And she will be back next week. I'm here with Ari.
Hi, Brian.
Ari, great to have you back. Now, are you familiar with what the Laramie Project is?
I'm not, no, actually.
The Laramie Project, you see, your kids aren't in high school yet.
Not as of yet.
No, and if hopefully they will stay in a parochial school.
that's the intention at this point.
I mean, the latest thing in a lot of these high schools and colleges is for the drama department, as another way of pushing the gay agenda, to present this vile play called The Laramie Project, which is about the Matthew Shepard murder case. Some of the things about this that really trouble parents, first of all, it is really being pushed by the major homosexual groups. It is an intensely pro-homosexual play with a strong anti-Christian, and when I say strong, I mean virulent anti-Christian undertone, that people with traditional values, the message is that they're people who could possibly commit murders. They're nasty, horrible people. The other thing about the play is that it is extremely violent. If you get a chance to read it, you can find it on the internet somewhere. It is very, very violent, full of a lot of very, really rough language, really profane language. It's not the kind of thing that you really want in a high school, but it's going in high schools everywhere. And Mass Resistance is actually going to be involved in a community forum in the town of Acton on the 3rd of October. We'll be having more on that, on this play, which is being presented at the Acton-Boxborough Regional High School. And so that's coming up. So let's see, what else is going on? As usual, we've got a full show. David Parker is going to be on in our next segment. C.J. Doyle is going to be here. We're going to be talking about a lot of things. And, boy, it's, you know, you'd think it would be a quiet summer.
It's never a dull moment.
It's never a dull moment. One of the things that's going to be, I mean, I guess the main thing that's going to be happening is there are a lot of very troubling bills coming up before the legislature. The Transgender Rights and Hate Crimes Bill, H-1722, this is a bill that, you know, you would not believe would even be, you know, before, you know, in any legislature. It's one of the most dangerous bills ever filed. This is a bill right now before the legislature where they're about to have a public hearing that would protect and promote a range of obscene behaviors in schools, businesses, and public accommodations. That is, if the school wanted to have a transsexual second grade teacher, this bill would make it a criminal activity not to allow that, and a hate crime for anybody who criticized that. So it criminalizes any critical response, real or perceived, to any sort of public or private gender identity or expression. This is the next sort of phase of the gay movement. Once they've got, you know, the gay marriage wrapped up, is to push the transgender, transsexual thing as a hate crime. And I guess we've sort of seen in the Boston Globe the, you know, the leading up to that. Last spring, I guess it was in June, they had a transgender transgender lobby day at the State House, and that got it started. So you saw this in the Globe.
I've seen it in the Globe, and what's also astounding, Brian, is that I've done a few talks for Mass Resistance, and when I speak about this transgender bill, what's kind of troubling and astounding to me is the absence of knowledge that people have about this bill that's being presented. And simply what one needs to do is expose what the homosexual lobbyists are trying to project into the State House, and the mere presentation of it to individuals disgusts them. And so that's why having the radio show and having Mass Resistance is so that important, so that the exposure of these types of bills arouse the reaction that's warranted to them.
Yeah, and you know, the media, I mean, I can't overestimate how much effort behind the scenes the gay lobby is putting into this. Mass Equality, which put something like $2 million over the last year into pushing or stopping the homosexual marriage amendment, the anti-homosexual marriage amendment, is putting its forces behind this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other groups, too. That's, right now, it's coming behind the scenes because, as you said, it's the kind of thing that's it's uncomfortable to talk about. And it's funny to watch how the media is sort of softening up the culture. The Boston Globe magazine had a two-part series on a doctor who is becoming or has, I don't know, become a woman through... I mean, this stuff is pretty chilling, where you have your body mutilated and implants, breast implants, and weird things to your body because you think you're a woman. And they go through this process as if it's just a normal, natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
They had it, in late July and early August, this two-part series in Boston Magazine about this doctor who now wears a dress, you know, doing patients. Mm-hmm. And they've had, you can see little things here and there in the paper normalizing that.
It's become more celebrated. It's something that the groups say that this sort of behavior, this sort of activity shouldn't be judged. It's merely an alternative lifestyle is what it's called. Passing no judgment upon it, allowing it to infiltrate into every aspect of our life, not just becoming into the medical world as this doctor has done, but once it starts here, it's allowed to spread, and once the media takes hold of it and coddles it and allows it to be put in the forefront as a normal behavior, then people become desensitized to it, and that's the objective. I think that's the ultimate ploy, is the prolonged exposure to this type of behavior and activity desensitizes people.
Desensitizing people, as you said, and I guess, you know, intimidating people who might speak out against it. You'll notice that there are no other radio stations or TV stations or newspapers that's even talking about this the way we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you know, and it's funny, you talk about, one of the big things in the Boston Herald that they have in Monday's paper, University of Vermont installing gender-neutral bathrooms for transgendered people. And so they're having men's bathrooms and women's bathrooms and transgendered bathrooms at the University of Vermont. Now, I mean, only in some of these wacko places would they even think of this, but they will have enough of these kinds of things in the paper, and the media will start talking about it seriously, where I'm going to tell you, I mean, unless somebody does something... You know, I can remember, Ari, it wasn't that long ago when Paul Cellucci, as governor, completely vetoed the idea of civil unions because it was too wacky. And look, civil unions now is considered like, it's considered like the arch-conservative you know, approach.
Right, right. And that's the objective. It doesn't have to be accepted on its first exposure, but as it continues to be trickled in, it's called a drip campaign. You continuously expose people to it. Those may be outraged at the beginning, but as it continues, as it gets more support in the communities, then it becomes an accepted practice, right. And any dissent from which will be, you'll be labeled a hater, and that's the ultimate objective, to silence you.
I mean, it was interesting in Tuesday's Boston Globe, they were endorsing candidates in the 5th District congressional race, which they're having a special election, as most people know, because Marty Meehan is stepping down to become president of UMass or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're endorsing Nikki Tsongas, Paul Tsongas' widow, for the Democratic nomination because she is a perfect liberal, goes along with everything. But among the Republicans, they're endorsing Jim Oganowski. And Jim Oganowski is probably the leading, the leader of the Republican. But to give you an example of what the Globe considers important and the what the Republican Party is like these days, what the Globe mentions here is Oganowski would allow gays and lesbians to serve in the military without don't ask, don't tell rules. And he is a 28-year veteran. And he opposes gay marriage but favors civil unions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Globe's take on why we should... he's a Republican, so doesn't oppose gay, doesn't go all the way to gay marriage. I guess since these four civil unions, we can.
That's good enough.
So, Jack, are we wrapping up here or?
No, I'm just hanging over the time.
Hey, Brian, let me ask you a quick question, a little about this University of Vermont thing here, with regards to having them have gender neutral bathrooms. I'm a little, if you could explain that, I'm a little confused by it, because if you have a male becoming a female or vice versa, where does one enter into a gender-neutral bathroom exactly?
Well,
I don't know if you have any take on that.
Well, let's take a look at the article here and see exactly what they say.
Yeah, it's just a little confusing to me. Gender-neutral, what does that mean? If you're a male or you're a female, is there something in between?
Future for transgendered people. It's about inclusively and accessibility of meeting all people's needs, not just a few.
Mm-hmm.
So,
again, it's the accommodate everybody and anything, irrespective of... The abhorrent behavior.
Kelly, a 19-year-old transgender UVM student who declined to give her last name, says she's been made to feel, quote, very uncomfortable in restrooms. I think that they're a really important thing to have, she said, of the new facilities, just because there can be tense situations in gendered bathrooms, especially for trans-identified people. You need a space to use the restroom and feel safe and comfortable.
Mm.
Safe and comfortable is the, I love that word.
Right, right. Relative.
So they're going to have three kinds of bathrooms at the University of Vermont.
It's quite an accommodation.
Well, I'm glad my son isn't going there, or my daughter. it's been an interesting summer, that's for sure. Let's see. What else is going on? What else?
Mm-hmm.
We ought to bring up the, it looks like Margot Botsford. Is that her name? Botsford?
Botsford.
The new Superior Court judge that Deval Patrick has appointed. On Friday, we'll have been voted on by the governor's council,
mm-hmm.
And from everything we can see, she's going to make it. We're going to talk about her in another segment. This is a limousine liberal who, as far as we can tell, her main qualifications are that she gave more money than legally permissible to both Deval Patrick and. Timothy Murray, the lieutenant governor.
Now, if she's appointed by Deval Patrick, is she a Cadillac limousine liberal?
I guess so.
Okay.
I guess so.
Just wanted to make sure.
So, all right. Well, We've broken the ice for our first segment here. Let's take a quick break and move on to David Parker. David has a lot of very interesting stuff to say. His appeal case is coming on, coming up very fast, and we've got a lot to hear about that. So this is Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio. Well, the David Parker case is something that has really been chilling parents across the country ever since back in April of 2005. And we were there, and I watched it as David Parker, a parent in Lexington, got arrested, taken and, you know, taken to jail overnight, and hauled into court in handcuffs the following day over his disagreement with the schools teaching homosexuality and transgenderism to his kindergarten-age son, and them refusing to allow David Parker and his wife to even know when they were going to do it, allow them to pull their kids out, or even tell them after the fact. I mean, this is how arrogant the city, the town of Lexington has been. Since then, David Parker and the Worthlands, another couple whose son had to endure the reading of King and King in the second grade, which is a book about homosexual romance, have filed a federal civil rights lawsuit. The lawsuit had its first going in this past, what was it? David, you're here. Why don't you tell us about it?
Hi, Brian. Pleasure to be here. In the federal district court, it was thrown out on a motion to dismiss. And what we have done now is we've just submitted to an appeal to the First Circuit Court to have it reinstated in the district court. Right. So that's where we are.
Now, this wasn't just, I mean, this motion to dismiss was by, you know, the town of Lexington and the ACLU. And the real incredibly offensive part of this is Judge Mark Wolf's ruling, which basically said, I mean, I cannot believe that a human being, much less a judge, would actually say this. And you can read this ruling on the massresistance.org website, that the schools have not only a right, but in fact a duty to teach homosexuality to kids, even if the parents aren't notified, not necessarily letting the parents pull their kids out, because this is what's necessary for tolerance in society. This is madness. And I can understand. I mean, so you guys are, you're appealing the case.
Correct.
And the latest in that is, which we, on the Mass Resistance website you can see now, is that several of the major homosexual groups in the United States, GLSEN and PFLAG, have filed to give an amicus brief, each one of them, in this case, and to be a part of it against you. And this gives it huge national implications. And just, I guess, a couple of weeks ago, your lawyers filed the brief to, at the Federal Appeals Court.
Right. And the pro-homosexual lobby groups, they understand very well that this is going to be precedent for the country when it comes to parental rights in the schools concerning human sexuality and indoctrination and to accept transgenderism. You know, at the heart of transgenderism is a lie that males can be female and vice versa. It is a lie both scientifically and it is a lie morally. And what's going to happen in society is the rest of society is going to be forced to lie. Right. The law is going to say you must lie and call males female. You know, you might as well call light dark, dark light.
You're a trained biologist.
Scientist, yes.
A man's DNA doesn't change to become a female, no matter what kind of mutilation you do to the body, or no matter what clothes you wear, or no matter what hormones you take. It just doesn't happen.
That's exactly right. It's imprinted on every single cell in the body, your gender. It's either XX chromosome or XY chromosome for a man. And You know, they're trying to indoctrinate children that there's no difference. I mean, it's radical feminism in a way. When there's no difference at all in between a male and a female, then you can have two females, lesbians, as moms, because you don't need a dad. They're equal. You just substitute it with another mom.
Right. Yeah. It's insanity. You know, it's almost like that's the next step of the homosexual movement. Men want to, you know, act like women. You know, next thing they want to become a woman.
Well, you know, you can tattoo yourself with stripes, but you're not going to be a zebra.
Right.
And, you know, people, and these are little children we're talking
about.
Yeah,
and this is a thing that really, really riles people, is it's one thing for the public forum to deal with these issues. But to go into the public schools and have them say, we are going to do this without your knowledge or consent as a parent. And you don't have the right to know when your kid is being, your child is being taught these things.
Oh, it would undermine teaching and learning.
Yeah.
The argument is from Mark Wolf. And he said, and further, I summarize it, if you don't like it, leave. In other words, leave the public square, go to a Christian school. Now, just imagine if we said homosexuals leave the schools and go to a homosexual school.
Right.
So why is it tolerated the other way around?
Mm-hmm. What more can you tell us about all this?
Well, stuff? Another thing that was in the argument of Judge Mark Wolf is he quoted, very interesting, the book Changing Minds. And in the book, it says minds, of course, are hard to change. Basically, the intention is to change the minds of your children. Now, one thing, they keep on framing this around Who's in a Family, One Book, and King and King. Right. We were told there's books used as tools in every single classroom in the elementary school.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I went to the book Changing Minds and read it. It also says, when we are young, our minds change with great ease. Our understanding of the world alters quickly as well. And the pro-homosexual lobby and the teachers that support this, they know that.
Well, now, let's. What is this business of changing minds? What are they trying to change your children's minds from and to?
Well, that homosexual conduct should not only be accepted and affirmed, but embraced and celebrated. Gay marriage is a celebration, and they're bringing children into this by inculcating gay marriage.
All right. So, wow, man. I think, Jack, let's go a little further in this one, okay? I'll tell you, Dave, this idea then that what we need to do is just be tolerant is completely turned upside down.
Well, they never wanted tolerance. They never wanted just tolerance. What they want is absolute acceptance, embracing, and celebrating of these lifestyles, these choices, and these human sexuality issues. I found the Summer Briefs comment by GLAAD. This is another homosexual
GLAAD is Gay Lesbian Advocates and Defenders. It's a pro homosexual legal group that is funded in part by taxpayer money. They're located downtown. They're the group that was behind the Goodrich decision on same-sex marriage.
Exactly.
And they have pushed the envelope legally everywhere they can to, you know, change the laws.
Exactly.
And through court. So they're getting involved with this case.
They are part of the amicus brief in this latest appeal, and I found their summer brief on the internet commenting on this case and what they're going to do in the amicus brief. And it's headed, this is very interesting, Keeping Schools Safe for LGBT Families. Now, what is an LGBT family? A lesbian family? Think about this. What is a transgender family?
So this is the whole, you know, this. I remember reading some of the emails that went back and forth between the teachers and you and your wife, which are posted on Mass Resistance, where the teacher was saying, oh, you don't want to talk about families.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What they are doing is they are changing
the, it's wordsmithing.
Yeah,
it's
they're
wordsmithing.
Changing the definition of a family. I mean, a family is a mother and a father.
Well, they want to do, this is what they do, to introduce little children to the terms of and concepts of lesbianism, homosexuality, transgenderism, and gay, they do this. They call, and you'll see it over and over in the homosexual literature, lesbian families, homosexual families, gay parenting, homosexual parenting, and gay marriage. What they do is take the terminology and stick it on to another word. So every time we went into the school to say, please notify us when you talk about homosexuality to our five-year-old boy. Oh, you don't want to talk about families? We can't talk about families? And they do this on purpose. It's called framing the issue. Reframing the issue, like Kevin Jennings said, and this is the GLSEN way to do this, he said that we made inroads by reframing the whole thing to have to do with safety.
Wow.
And he took the calling card of his opposition. See, what they do is reframe the issue to get it, because they can't.
Yeah, we've got that speech on the Mass Resistance website. People should go to the website and see some of this stuff. So, Dave, we're running out of time here. What's next? I mean, this is really frightening stuff. I mean, I talked to a mother who wanted to, you know, take legal action against her school for some of the stuff they're doing, and they said no. The lawyer said because of this Judge Wolf's decision, the case law in Massachusetts is now against you.
Exactly, and this all started with the Brown versus Hot, Safe, and Sexy, yeah, in which Susie Landolfi came into a Chelmsford school and was extremely vulgar to children, talking about erection wear and orgasms,
all
under the auspice of AIDS education, and they're using that precedent against us. But if we do not win this case, the floodgates are absolutely open.
Right. Well, Dave, we're gonna have you back. When is the next?
The process is that we've submitted our appeal. Within about 40 days, the opposition, the town of Lexington, the amicus briefs will come in, and then we will have a chance in a certain time period to answer that. And so we're looking at the earliest, the end of this year. That's the earliest.
Okay, and what we're hoping is that it'll be thrown back into the court.
Well, let us have our day in court. Yeah, this is what we ask. If they're so confident that this is not indoctrination, that it's completely constitutional, let us have our day in court.
David Parker, God bless you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Brian. God bless you.
If you believe this program offers the balance needed to bring you the information not currently heard on the mainstream media today, then listen to the end of the broadcast to learn how you can personally help to keep Mass Resistance Radio on the air. Now, more with Brian Kammacher.
Hello, this is Brian Kammacher. We are back with Mass Resistance Radio. And our first show after this hiatus here on 1330 WRCA in Cambridge. And for our first show here in the People's Republic of Cambridge, we have another special guest, C.J. Doyle of the Catholic Action League. C.J., thanks for coming on.
Brian, glad to be here. Congratulations being back on the air. You're an important voice for any conservative, anybody, moral traditionalist in this area. We're glad that you're able to broadcast again.
Well, thanks. So what's the latest?
Well, there's a lot of things are of concern. We're still dealing with kind of with the fallout of that vote in June regarding that killed the marriage amendment. And one of the issues that's come up is a number of groups around the country are talking about the fact that we have so many Catholic legislators who are voting for abortion and for same-sex marriage and for other things. And one group is actually calling for the Knights of Columbus to remove all of the members of the Massachusetts legislature who are knights who voted for this same-sex marriage, which the church unequivocally condemns. And back the Boston Herald had a front-page headline a couple of weeks ago. A group called Concerned Roman Catholics wanted to remove. They said there were 16 knights, 16 members of the Knights of Columbus, who voted to kill the marriage amendment, which means, of course, obviously to both to uphold an unjust, an unlawful, and unconstitutional Supreme Court decision to preserve this thing completely unheard of in the history of the planet, same-gender marriage, and, of course, to deprive the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts the right to vote on the definition of a fundamental social institution. Mm-hmm. And actually, by our count, there's about 23 members of the Knights.
Now, is this John O'Gorman? Is he involved with this?
Yeah, I think John O'Gorman is involved.
John's been on our show.
Yeah, he's been involved, and as I said, there's a group in California, Concerned Roman Catholics, and, of course, we broke the story, the Catholic Action League broke the story in The Wanderer about the fact fact that about 75% of all the knights in the Knights of Columbus in the Massachusetts legislature, 100% of all the members of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, which is another officially Catholic organization, and between 75 and 80% of Catholic university and law school and secondary school graduates all voted to deprive the people of the right to vote.
This is
appalling.
It's interesting because you can go on the MassGov website, and every legislator has his sort of homepage where he talks about his affiliations.
Yeah.
And they will list Knights of Columbus, which is a Catholic fraternal organization that is supposed to, I understand, uphold Catholic values and you know, Catholic schools, all of these things. And isn't it true that Sal DeMacy, the Speaker of the House, that twisted arms for homosexual marriages?
And who gave a clenched fist Marxist salute when the vote was over, is a member of the KSC. By the way, DeMacy to be a member of the Knights of Columbus, one of the conditions are you have to be a practical Catholic, meaning a practicing Catholic, in communion with the Holy See. Do you know DeMacy identifies himself now as a member of Old North Church, the congregation there, you know, the Episcopal Church, Christ Church Episcopal, and refers to the rector there as his pastor? Here's a guy who's defected, who's apostatized, who's left the Catholic Church, yet he still puts, for electoral reasons, that he's a member of the Knights of Columbus on his website. You know, there's about 40,000 knights in Massachusetts, and so they obviously recognize that there are some votes there. So all these politicians cynically put on their websites and in their campaign literature that they're members of the Knights of Columbus, or they're members of the Ancient Order of Hibernians, or they went to BC or Holy Cross, and then they vote entirely against, in a manner diametrically opposed to core Catholic values, to fundamental Catholic principles. And it's a disgrace. And, you know, the cardinal and the bishops have issued some good statements on same-sex marriage and other issues, but it comes to a point where it isn't just a matter of moral support. You also have to deal with the overcoming and confronting dissension and corruption in your own ranks. And here we have, in the Knights of Columbus, which is a formerly Catholic and formerly pro-life organization, men who simply and utterly oppose, as I said, fundamental Catholic teaching.
Well, I mean,
they need to be removed.
A guy who says he goes to an Episcopal church.
I know.
I mean, you know, I...
And who's ever heard of an Italian Episcopalian, by the way? But, yeah, oh, that's another matter. But
well, I guess they're Irish Episcopalians, so the Italians couldn't be far behind.
There are.
But anyway, yeah, I remember John O'Gorman. He was on the show earlier this year, and he caught so much, hostility.
Yeah.
For his insistence, which at the time seemed rather extreme, that the Knights of Columbus throw out these legislators who are anti-Catholic.
Yeah.
And he just wouldn't quit.
Yeah. Good for him. No, perseverance in this matter is very, very important because they've simply been stonewalling for years, and they've been passing the buck. What the KSC has been doing on a national level is passing the buck to the bishops and saying, well, it's up to the bishops to excommunicate them. It's up to the bishops to determine who's a practical Catholic. Well, I think what a lot of people are coming to say is, what difference does it make? It's not up to you don't have to decide who is a member of the Catholic Church in good standing. All you have to decide is, are they pro-life or pro-abortion? Are they pro-traditional morality, or are they pro-homosexual? Are they pro-traditional marriage, or are they pro-same-sex marriage? And in these cases, their voting record speaks for itself. These men ought to be expelled. It's not only DeMacy. You know, Majority Leader John Rogers, a graduate of Catholic Memorial High School, by the way, and somebody who was historically pro-life and pro-family, he's flipped. He voted against it. Garrett Bradley, who's a triple eagle, that's to say he's a graduate of Boston College High School, Boston College, and Boston College Law School, voted for the homosexuals at the Constitutional Convention. Robert DeLeo, Chris
DeLeo,
Fallon, Representative Honan, McMurtry, who was just elected out in Dedham, Bob Spillane, who was active in the Knights of Columbus, who ran part of his campaign in his Worcester district out of the local Knights of Columbus Council, Robert Spillane as opposed to Spillane, Senator Knappick, Tom McGee, who was, I guess he's either nephew or the son of Speaker Tommy McGee, Michael Morrissey, Charles Murphy, Bob Nyman, Angelo Pupolo, Chris Donnell and Steve DiNatale, all these guys who are members of the Knights of Columbus, and as I said, many of them, as I said, Catholic school graduates also, work overtly against the church. And it really comes down to the point is, we may not be able to defeat this homosexual agenda at all times in the public square, but we could at least insist on fidelity and integrity in our own Catholic institutions.
So how do you get them kicked out of the KSC?
Well, first of all, I think you have to put as much publicity on the Knights of Columbus like any other organization. I don't think they're in favor of adverse or negative publicity. I think you have to work through your local Knights of Columbus councils and let there's 40,000 members of the KSC in Massachusetts. Almost every Catholic family knows somebody that's a knight or has a member that's a knight. Tell them that these people have to go. Tell New Haven, the Supreme Council down in New Haven, that they have to be removed. And tell the State Council here in Massachusetts, which is located out in Norwood, that these people have to be removed. It's a scandal. It's a disgrace. And by the way, who's going to take the Catholic Church or Catholic organization seriously when they come out on abortion or same-sex marriage or on other issues when they tolerate this overt public dissent within their own organizations?
Yeah, I believe me. I understand. Yeah. So is there a list, a public list anywhere? We could put one up on massresistance.org. Is there one of
members who are
right?
Yeah. Well, as I said, there's a list in the August 11th Boston Herald. We have a somewhat more extensive list because we have a few other names. We'd be happy to send that list over to you, Brian, and maybe we can also come up with the phone numbers of the State Council and the Supreme Council and various local Knights of Columbus councils, people for people to call to demand that these quislings, these traitors, be removed from a Catholic pro-life, pro-family organization.
Well, yeah, we'd be happy to do it. As I said, I really admired John O'Gorman because boy, did he get a lot of hostility from, Mass Citizens for Life. They tried to throw him out.
They expelled him from the Knights of Columbus,
It's astonishing. Really?
It's absolutely astonishing. If you support abortion or if you support same-sex marriage, you're a member in good standing. But if you criticize the organization for having this corruption in its ranks, you're expelled.
Wow. Jack Nash, our producer and extraordinaire, and does everything around here we need. So, is the Archdiocese getting involved with this at all, CJ?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's very disappointing. We just learned that Catholic Memorial High School, which is having its 50th anniversary on September the 8th, is going to have a dinner, which is going to include Cardinal O'Malley and sitting at the head table, Boston Mayor Thomas Menino, who, as you know, is strongly for same-sex marriage, actually welcomed the couples into City Hall the first day that licenses were available, is strongly pro-abortion, recently came out for homosexual adoption, is opposed to aid to parochial schools, every imaginable Catholic issue.
Menino marches in the gay pride parade, but will not march in the St. Patrick's Day parade.
And at one point actually forbade Boston police officers and firefighters and EMTs, emergency medical technicians, from marching in the St. Patrick's Day parade a few years ago. And here he's being honored. I don't know if he's being honored, but he's certainly being treated as an honored guest at the 50th anniversary of a Catholic high school run by a Catholic religious order, the Irish Christian Brothers, and His Eminence the Cardinal will be attending, which is I think very, very unfortunate. And it sends terribly mixed signals. It sends signals to Catholics that the betrayal of the Catholic faith, that apostasy from the Catholic faith, is entirely respectable, and that it no way disqualifies someone from good standing. And it also sends a message that it's perfectly acceptable to fraternize with people who have betrayed the faith, and that betrayal itself, if it's crowned with political success, will not be opposed or criticized. And of course, we saw that with Catholic Charities too, and with them honoring Menino.
Yeah, I remember you guys were out, were protesting.
13 degrees in the cold wind off of Boston Harbor, and we protested that atrocity where they had an official agency of the Archdiocese of Boston honored a mayor who spent his entire career working against Catholic principles. And to give the cardinal credit, he did end up boycotting that dinner, though it was allowed to go on. It's an agency of the Archdiocese, so it was rather confusing.
Right. Yeah. Oh boy. Well, God bless you for I can tell you that a lot of Catholics who talk to us admire the work that you do.
Thank you.
And they more people need to get involved, but it really breaks people's hearts when the Catholic Church, which is the major religious order in Massachusetts, when they start letting up, Everything else starts to slip.
All of our Catholic universities and colleges and secondary schools use these pro-abortion, pro-same-sex marriage figures, for fundraising purposes. They give them commencement degrees. They have them as commencement speakers. They have them on their boards of trustees. Lieutenant Governor Tommy O'Neill is a trustee of both Boston College and a director of Zavarian Brothers High School. Martha Coakley, as we mentioned in one of your previous shows, spoke at Regis just this year. Marion Walsh, who's now the cheerleader for same-sex marriage, is on the board of directors of Ursuline Academy. Wayne Budd is a trustee of Boston College. Bob Kraft, who signed that statement supporting same-sex marriage, is a trustee of Boston College. Okay. Former Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Murphy is a trustee of Merrimack College. Jim Roosevelt is on the board of Emmanuel College. Wow. And Tom Menino is on the fundraising committee for the Library Center, which is part of Catholic Charities. Wow. So we can't really... no one will take the church seriously unless they get these quislings out of positions of authority within Catholic agencies and institutions. And as I said, we talk about John O'Gorman. I think he deserves tremendous credit because he's made tremendous sacrifices, and he's suffered a lot of not only public criticism but character assassination and everything else. Yet at last, this issue is now coming to the public fore because of him and because of other people.
Wow, wonderful. We're definitely going to stay on top of this. If you could get us the names, we'll post them.
Great.
And we'll post a statement from you.
Good.
And we've got some statements from John O'Gorman, too. And, we'll keep up the fight. And C.J. Doyle, thanks a lot for coming.
Great to be here,
How
Brian.
Can people get involved with your organization?
You can contact us at 781-251-9739, Catholic Action League, P.O. Box 112, Roslindale, Mass., 02131. That's P.O. Box 112, Roslindale, Mass., 02131.
I would encourage all Catholics to get involved. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, back from our
hiatus.
Okay, Ari, let's talk a little bit about the ADL.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us attend Orthodox synagogues.
Indeed.
And the ADL has gotten itself into a little bit of trouble. The ADL is the Anti-Defamation League. And if you've been reading the papers at all, one man wrote a letter to the editor to the Watertown local newspaper, the Watertown Tab, commenting that the Anti-Defamation League has this big No Place for Hate campaign, but he's an Armenian, and there's lots of Armenians in Watertown. And why doesn't the ADL recognize the Armenian genocide of 1915? And the ADL responded, well, we don't really do it, and we have these political reasons. And one thing led to another. The town boards or whatever met. They booted the No Place for Hate out of Watertown. It expanded. It got regional and national. That story got national attention. It's become an international story. The Turkish ambassador has flown to Israel, and they're having these talks, and the Andrew Tarsi?
Tarsi, that's right.
Yeah, the
executive director.
The executive director of the local ADL was fired by Foxman, the national head,
mm-hmm.
and it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And the Anti-Defamation League is in the center of it. I guess if you're in the No Place for Hate business, eventually it's going to run into trouble.
See, the problem, Brian, with the No Place for Hate issue is that it's more of a feel-good type of campaign, where the hate in and of itself, where in the No Place for Hate, in quotation marks, campaign, it's not a defined term. I mean, it's a subjective term in terms of hate, because they'll define hate as, if you pass judgment against gay marriage or homosexuals or transgenderism, that is then defined as being hateful. And when one is labeled as a hater, it basically has this reaction that you don't want to talk about it again. You don't want to pass judgment.
Right.
You're fearful of being called a hater. And I think the projection of this No Place for Hate campaign simply puts people into hiding. I think that's the ultimate objective, is for people not to pass judgment on things.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, the word hate has lost its meaning anyway, because anything the left doesn't like becomes hate.
Exactly.
You know, it's basically a left-wing agenda that they're pushing, but, you know, they use this intimidation. But there's this other problem, I think, and you can address this too, is that, you know, traditional Jews have to deal with this very public Jewish group pushing a left-wing agenda, that is anti-religious, anti-Jewish values, under the rubric of anti-hate. And how... I mean, it's tough.
You're exactly right. It's the opposite of traditional Jewish values, which is why primarily the proponents of these programs tend to be secular Jews, non-observant liberal Jews, and it all kind of comes under the umbrella of liberalism, where everything is accepted, nothing is judged, there's no difference between right and wrong. It's just different. If one labels it as wrong, then you're actually hating. So again, it becomes a campaign where people don't want to assert their own traditional values because they're fearful of being labeled as a hater. And it's very consistent with these secular Jewish groups such as the ADL, which does do good work. They do very good work in terms of when there's anti-Semitism that's being projected by a certain group or swastikas painted on it. They're very much vocal,
well,
and that's
you
great.
Know, I'll tell you though, Ari, I get the feeling that, you know, the ADL was founded in 1913. You know, with that whole Leo Frank thing in Georgia, and that for most of its lifetime, it did do legitimate fighting anti-Semitism. I think that in today's America, there really isn't that much anti-Semitism. I mean, when I was a kid, Jews weren't allowed in the country club across the street from my high school, and you know, the Jews weren't allowed in many of the clubs in town. My dad was told that Jews couldn't do business on the waterfront. None of that happens anymore.
Right. Well, that type of overt discrimination, like was done with the Jews and with minorities. That's true. That's true. Yeah. It's really not. It's not that prevalent anymore.
And so the ADL sort of needs a reason for being, and so they have to sort of invent, you know, new kinds of things. I've always been very, I've had a lot of difficulty with all of these swastika incidents, because I think that what they tend to do is they blow them completely out of proportion. I mean, they had this at my kid's school, Newton North High, where somebody drew a swastika in the bathroom. Now, that happens, that probably happened at my high school and anybody's high school, and the normal way of doing it would be you go in and you just paint it over. But what the ADL did was it became a federal case. It was the front page of the paper. It was, you know, let's, you know, get the police involved, get you know, have citywide breakfasts over it. And the natural effect of that is more swastikas, because we know how high school kids are. If they know they're going to get the mayor of Newton's attention by drawing a swastika, heck, I would have drawn a swastika just to get them. And so, you know, it's all this feel good stuff that lacks a ton of common sense. And the problem is that the anti-Semitism business is sort of waning, but they still need to do a lot of fundraising.
That's true. The certain things do in fact need to be manufactured. Now, if one were to deal with the painting of a swastika in a high school bathroom as some punk degenerate, you know, some confused, mixed up white supremacist kid listening to heavy metal, you know, that's pretty much who are the perpetrators of these things. Yeah. It's not the resurgence of Nazism back into the United States.
And, you know, the proof of that is when they actually do catch the kids, like they had some that were drawn on some cards in Wellesley, and they caught the kids doing it. Well, what are you going to do to a couple of punk kids that just did it for kicks? You can't throw them in jail for 15 years, and so nothing really happened to them, but they made a big deal. But I think that the bigger thing is this whole no place for hate thing, where they've sort of pushing the whole liberal social agenda as this anti-hate thing. and it really upsets a community. The community's basically being told that your community is such an incubator of hate and bigotry that you need special training from a bunch of secular Jews to come into your school.
And with you know, like you said before, with the No Place for Hate, it tends to be a manufactured type of issue, because it's not as if there's pervasive lynching going on in the streets in Newton. It's something that needs to be, and you know, again we were talking a little before about the homosexual movements, and they need to manufacture issues such as this too, such as bullying. Remember the bullying bill that we talked about, as if there's tremendous bullying going on, or a child suicide bill that they need funding for. They have to manufacture the fact that children are offing themselves in record numbers. So it's very consistent with the liberal mindset that if there isn't an issue necessarily going on, one needs to be manufactured, and then we can tackle it in that way and feel good about ourselves in doing so.
You're listening to Mass Resistance Radio. It's Brian Kamiker here with Ari Taube. We're talking about the latest stuff going on with the Anti-Defamation League getting in trouble over this whole business of the Armenian genocide. So what ended up happening was all these other communities started getting ready to boot out the No Place for Hate people because of their refusal to, you know, recognize the Armenian genocide. This happened over the last couple of weeks. And so the ADL was painted into a corner, and so I guess Foxman decided, well, let me look at the political calculus here. So he said, all right, we're going to recognize it. And that sort of sort of slowed down the train for the time being.
Right.
But if you look at this week's Jewish Advocate, over the last couple of days, the Turks are getting involved,
mm-hmm.
and they're putting pressure on the Jews in Turkey. They're putting pressures on the Israelis. They're putting pressures. You know, they believe that Israel controls the American Jewish groups, and I don't know. Maybe they do. Who knows? I don't think anybody controls anybody. But in any case, it's getting worse.
Yeah. Well, and you know, they had fired Andy for Andy Tarsi.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Now they brought him back.
And
they brought him back.
That was where the backlash came from.
And you know, this is the problem when you set yourself up as the, you know, the definer of what hate is.
Right.
And run around, you know, raising money about going into schools and teaching people what hate and what isn't. Eventually, it's gonna get back at you.
And the problem with having liberals define what hate is anything that a liberal doesn't believe is hate. Meaning, if you're against gay marriage, if you're against abortion, if you're against racial quotas in schools and affirmative action, this is hate. And this is what they'll define you as a hater. So you can't have one group define what hate is, when especially when it's liberals, because they'll define anything as hate if you believe alternately they do.
With all due humility, I have an article in this week's Jewish Advocate called "The ADL Gives Jews a Bad Name" on this, and you can go to thejewishadvocate.com and see it, and we'll post it on Mass Resistance. I'm surprised they were willing to print it. I put a lot of the blame of this whole thing back in the 80s and 90s with, as I say in my article, the now sainted Lenny Zakim. I got to know Lenny a little bit, and he steered, you know, he brought in some very radical people. He handed out that really horrid book that the ADL nationally published called The Religious Right, The Assault on Tolerance and Pluralism in America, which was this compendium of just really nastiness and bigotry and hatred itself against prominent conservative Christians, and it set the tone of the organization of being basically, as Don Fetter wrote in a Boston Herald article around that time, that they were becoming a bigoted organization themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so now they're involved with Mass Equality. They're part of Mass Equality's Coalition for Gay Marriage, which paints people like you and me as bigots.
Mm-hmm.
They in the 80s they were against the repeal of the terribly anti-Catholic Know Nothing Amendment, which I guess I should have asked C.J. Doyle about, and it's become a left-wing group that will also deal with anti-Semitism now and then if it ever shows up. Mm-hmm. But then they'll do it in the wrong way.
Right. And it all tends to be they partner up with them because they have similar mindsets, similar liberal mindsets of feeling good. Let's do what feels good. I think the great Rush Limbaugh always said that conservatives think and liberals feel, because the liberals tend to base their arguments solely on emotion, and they don't factor in logic into much of their arguments. And so when you have groups such as the ADL that they try to portray No Place for Hate as being this great campaign, it's a great campaign if you subscribe to their version of what hate right. is. And so you can't have a group such as this to be able to.
So I guess right. it's in something like, I don't know, 60 communities, and it's a great racket. They mm-hmm. come in and they persuade people. How are we doing for time here? What do we got? 3 minutes? Okay. Well, let me know when we're getting close. We're getting our feet wet here again on our first show.
There was one thing you mentioned about the Governor's Council. I know you're going to bring it up, but that was about the people that are going to be going to the Governor's Council. Then they're having the vote for Friday.
Oh yeah, on the.
But you know that they normally do that on the following Wednesday. That's the way it's traditionally done. But they're doing it on Friday because of the fact that Governor Patrick wants to be able to sneak this through, and what better way to do it than on a Labor Day weekend when nobody's paying attention?
Yep, and we're gonna cover this in greater detail next week.
The Deval way.
Yeah, the Deval way. I mean, oh man,
gotta love him.
But anyway, so they go into these communities, and they did it in Newton. You know, they run in and they say, "Oh, your community is full of hate, mm-hmm. and we need to help. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take our solution, then you don't want to fight hate." Mm-hmm. And of course, all the liberals go, "Oh, of course we want to fight hate. Let's get involved." And they raise money, and the politicians completely fall over, and you know, you see these idiotic No Place for Hate signs, and then and your kids have to sit through these idiotic ridiculous
it's the same thing of what the homosexuals do in the school systems with bullying.
They try to
manufacture an issue, the fact that gay kids in the schools are constantly being bullied and thrown into blockers and discriminated against, mm-hmm. and they have to come in and start to indoctrinate kids as to how homosexuality should be perceived and how it should be practiced. So that's it needs to be manufactured, and then they're able to be able to inculcate into
and you can't population. Say, well, maybe we're approaching this the wrong way. You know. Anyway, we're running out of time. Ari, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, man.
This is Brian Kammacher, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be back next week with Amy and her report from Laramie, Wyoming on the Laramie Project. And keep tuning in. And oh, yeah, go to the website. You'll be able to hear this on the website, the massresistance.org website, or our blog, massresistance.net. Talk to you next week.
This program is not only sponsor-driven, but also listener-supported. If you want this flow of information to continue, make a check payable to Mass Resistance Radio Show, Post Office Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454. That's Mass Resistance Radio Show, Post Office Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454. Or you may also go to the website, www.massresistance.org. And we'll return next week at 11 a.m. with another Mass Resistance radio program on Boston's 1330 WRCA.